So today, right now, we're going to be doing another episode of the Soul Sanctuary podcast. We're at episode 14, and today we're going to talk about a topic that is categorized underneath the self-love series. So with self-love, this is a very difficult thing to do. And there are quite a few different things, different aspects of self-love that make it so, so difficult for most of us. One of the most difficult topics is a shadow self. So I think most of us don't really even know what the shadow self is. Most of us have probably heard the term, but don't actually know what the shadow self is. And this is something we're going to be covering today, okay? This is a very difficult topic for most people. Before we start, give people time to arrive. I want to ask you guys a question. I like to start every episode with asking you guys a question. Now, some of you know that Emmy is a nickname for me. Some of you don't. When I went through my process, when I began to delve into my shadows and do that shadow work, I began to not resonate with my name. Like, you could call my name in a store, whatever setting, and most people, if you hear your name called, you will turn around and look. I, however, stopped doing that, not intentionally. It didn't feel like my name was being called. Outside of, you know, hearing mom, I'll turn around for mom, or the nickname that my husband has given me. But any other name, I wouldn't turn around for it. So now I want to ask you guys, how do you feel about the first name that you were given at birth? Your legal name, how do you feel about it? Have you gone through this process of beginning to lose your identity? This thing that happens as you really dive into that spiritual and self-love journey. For people who really go deep into it, and it might not be an intentional dive into it. It might be something that's like, I don't know what's going on with me. Why am I no longer resonating with my name? What is this about? For some, that's how it goes. I know for me, that's how it went. That's exactly how it went. Like, why does my name no longer resonate? So, y'all, let us know, how do you feel about your first name? And what did you do about it? So Delaney loves their first name. Love it. Very unique name. Anna says, hated it, changed it a while ago. What did you hate about it, Anna? Sky says, sometimes I enjoy mine. Over the years, I've begun to embrace it. And some names are so free that when we... You know, when we're kids, we get the stigma of people making fun of us. No, some people don't get it. They're very into the standard norms and anything outside of the norms. Their family life conditions them to believe that it's weird. I love your name, Sky. Catherine says, it's funny because the other day I was looking at my name and I didn't recognize it. Ooh, yeah, that's kind of how it happened for me, where it's just one day, like, I don't know my name. I don't, you know, like, I lost my identity. Alexandra says, I've been thinking of changing my name, waiting for guidance. Ooh. Truth be told, I think Carmen says, truth be told, I never liked it. I feel like it doesn't belong to me. Ooh. Lisa feels the same way too. Ooh. Wowzers. Lisa says, I don't feel like it's supposed to be my name. You know? I like my birth name, but I know that's not my real name, says Moonrock. I haven't lost that resonance with my name yet. Right? It doesn't happen right away. And some, it doesn't happen at all ever. You know? Some, it doesn't happen at all ever. Let's see. Mystic Mermaid. I've never felt a connection with my name, but I'm named after both my grandmothers, so I kept it, and I've always felt a connection with another name. Ooh. So it's like this thing of, you know, your actual identity, because there's, I feel like there's power in names. I feel like whatever you're named, you embody the essence of that name. That's what ends up happening. Let's see. Cheryl says, I accept my first name, but I identified more with the person I was when others used my nickname, Sherry. Ah, so I have quite a few different nicknames. For those of you who don't know, my government name is like 10 million names. Part of my culture, you have multiple first names, multiple middle names, and then, you know, you like, you take on your parents' maiden name, and then of course last name, and if that last name is hyphenated, that's more names. So I have quite a few names, and none of them resonated. It was almost this thing of whenever I would hear that, I felt the program that was attached to that name. It was a program attached to it. And I'm wondering if that's what you guys are going through. So you're probably wondering, what does first name have anything to do with the shadow self? How does it connect to the shadow self? In my journey, what I realized was, any environment where I am called a specific name, I feel obligated to behave within that specific program. It's basically like being a Stepford soul. You guys have probably heard of the concept of a Stepford wife, but have you heard of the concept of a Stepford soul? Now, I remember several years back, I don't think I ever heard this anywhere. I was having a debate with someone online. I believe they were criticizing me. I was going back and forth with some unknown stranger on Facebook, of course, because where else would we do this aside from Twitter, probably? So we were on Facebook. We were going back and forth. And they were like so hypercritical of the fact that I think for myself. And I finally got tired of it. I got tired of the back and forth, and they kept tagging me. And instead of, you know, being an adult and just blocking them, ignoring it, I went and unleashed, and I was like, I will not be a Stepford soul. And they were like, what is that? What is that even? Like a Stepford wife, but on a soul level, where you have to play this role and you can't exist outside of this role that someone else picks for you. Someone else is dictating to you your existence, your preferences, your path, all of these different things. And it was around that period where I began quite possibly the most difficult cycle, the most difficult learning period of my life to date. This was an entry into my shadow self. You feel the gravity of this conversation? Do you feel the gravity of it? This is probably where most of you are entering right now. And we don't know what the shadow self is. How could you ever actually truly believe you have any chance of surviving this ascension cycle? For most of us, we feel like we can't get through it. We don't know what's happening. We don't know why life is going the way that it is going. It's difficult. It's painful. We feel so alone. We feel so rejected and dejected. We feel like we are bottom barrel, the dregs of society. And we keep this hidden deep within us. We're afraid of this process. We're afraid of entering into it fully because why? Because we fear the unknown. That's the only reason why. So let's take a quick look. What's the shadow self? What is your guys' perception of the shadow self? Like, what's your definition of it? What do you think it is? I'm sure if you've been on social media, any platform you choose, actually, if you have any type of spiritual something in your algorithms, you'll be shown topics like self-love, self-empowerment, ascension, things about aliens, things about shadow selves. We don't know what these things are. So Catherine says, I only seen the title for today and felt really emotional because there's this part of you, Catherine, that's recognizing we're about to very gently, very lovingly remove that dirty band-aid. We're about to expose the wound so we can finally cleanse it. And once we cleanse it, it now stands a healthier, higher probability of actually healing. So, y'all, I went straight into my presentation mode this morning because I want to make sure I digested this topic. All right, guys. Y'all, I'm so sorry that I'm not sorry for wanting to take it to this degree. So this is a self-love series on the ME Evolving / Soul Sanctuary podcast. We're talking about the shadow self. Oops, here we go. What is the shadow? According to Jung, the shadow is a moral problem that challenges the whole ego personality, for no one can become conscious of the shadow without considerable moral effort. To become conscious of it involves recognizing the dark aspects of the personality as present and real. This act is the essential condition for any kind of self-knowledge. This is a process of retrieving your self-knowledge, knowledge of self. Ooh, the gravity of it. This is an excerpt from his book, The Ion. I mean, let's define Ion real quick, okay? This is a very, very old, old term. All right. Ion is Greek. The time which Ion represents is perpetual, unbounded, ritual, cyclical. So let's go into the Oxford Dictionary. My laptop is struggling. Oh my goodness. So, according to Oxford, was for late antiquity the personification of and god of indefinitely extending time. In early Greek, it means life, often in the sense of vital force, whole lifetime, generation. It was perhaps through application to the cosmos, the lifetime of which is never ending, that the word acquired the sense of eternity. There is no good evidence for cult of Ion in the classical or Hellenistic periods. The transition from philosophy to religious practice is first suggested by a statue of Ion dedicated. I don't want to read more. So that's the thing. It's this wholeness. It's the life essence, the whole totality of you. And unless you can tap into this shadow aspect, you will not enter into your Ion. You just won't. You won't. You won't. Yet, from all of these spiritual teachings that are so popular right now, is this rejection of one component of you. If you're a duality, a rejection of one component is a rejection of half of you. Ooh, oops. So which half are you rejecting? We go through these periods where we come across people and teachings that tell us you must be of love and light or you are evil, you are bad, you should be ashamed. And I went through this process of, but why? Why am I evil? Why am I bad? Why should I be ashamed? Like, what is this even about? And we didn't really know, did we? We didn't really have an understanding this entire time of exactly what it is we're rejecting. When we allow ourselves to enter into this space, okay, when we allow ourselves to become simply one component of a duality, we're exiting that totality. We are rejecting absolute half of us. The parts of us that are in the light are the parts of us that are socially acceptable, easily digested, the vanilla aspects. Nothing wrong with vanilla. But I mean, there's so many other flavors in creation. Why would you ever be okay with simply vanilla? We got butter pecan. We got birthday cake. We have pistachio. We have Rocky Road. We have fish food. We have Jerry Garcia. We have caramel cluster. There's so many different flavors. Yet we allow ourselves to believe that vanilla is the only acceptable. For me personally, vanilla is nothing but the base. Not the basic, but the base. The base with which you will begin to add the flavors, the textures, the additional ingredients. You could add nuts. You could add fruits. You could add, I don't know, sprinkles if you want. You could add pieces of brownie, birthday cake. All of these different things represent different aspects of ourselves. Aspects that we are shamed into believing are not appropriate. Oh my God. Are you kidding me? It's not appropriate for me to enjoy all the flavors of life. And when I entered into this question, I entered into this space of no longer knowing myself, no longer knowing my name, no longer having the identity that I was programmed to believe is the totality of me. I entered into a dark night of the soul. I entered into a very dark night of the soul that I did not think that I could exit safely from. It was something that completely consumed me. I completely shut down. I disappeared from the face of the earth for long periods. And when I disappeared, I remember at the start of this, it was 2014. And I can't remember dates, but I remember this. I remember this. This began early summer, late spring of 2014. And I began to not recognize my name. I began to shut down. I began to not go outside. Okay. I distinctly remember my husband had to have these really intense conversations with me of, you need to come outside of the house with me so the neighbors don't think that I've killed you. And it's kind of like, they don't even know I exist though. We had moved, okay? We had just moved and no one ever saw me. It would have to be this thing of maybe every like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, he would have to force me to get into the car to go and run errands with him. And it was anxiety. Anxiety, anxiety, anxiety. I don't know why. I don't know why. I couldn't understand why it was so difficult for me to be around other people. And I never talked anyways. You know what I mean? I never spoke. I never responded to people. I've said in previous live streams that I have this really rude quirk. I will just bust myself out right now. I have this really rude quirk where I'm very introverted in real life. So if you try and talk to me, I will either pretend I'm deaf. I know it's so rude. I would be like, you know, point to my ear, shake my head like I can't hear you. Or because I speak a different language, I will speak another language and pretend I can't speak whatever language you're using to speak to me, which is English, you know, because then if you're speaking to me in a different language than English, it's not actually a lie. So those are two things that I do when I'm out in public. It's rare for me to actually speak to people. And it became this thing of, I became very, very ashamed of who I am. Clearly, I'm not ashamed of that anymore. I'm publicly sharing with you my quirks. Air quotes on quirks. Quirks. Okay, I'm introverted. I'm an ambivert with a heavy emphasis on the introvert portion. I'm only extroverted when I'm sitting in front of my laptop with my microphone in a room by myself. That's the only time of extroversion. Don't get that twisted. I accept myself as I am now. I'm not even going to pretend, okay? That's who I am. And so this recognition of who I am was very shameful to me. I felt very ashamed of who I am. And as I entered deeper into that shadow journey, ooh-hoo-wee, that shame became even more pronounced. Even more pronounced. Like, I've never shared this with anyone, but those every that 2-3 weeks that my husband would be like, get dressed, you're getting in the car. I got to take you outside of the house. Like, he would force me. I would have to hype myself up. I would cry in the bathroom. I would have to hype myself up. Like, you could do this. You could do this. You could do this. Just change out of your jammies. You could do this. You don't have to talk to anybody. You just walk to the car. The car's right there. It's in the driveway. The neighbors won't even see you. Just walk to the car. I had to talk myself up for this. It was because I entered into the shadow aspects of myself. Now, let's look. I was entering into these shadow behaviors. What are the shadow behaviors? Here you go. A tendency to harshly judge others, especially if that judgment comes on an impulse. I felt like everyone was just caca. I'm sorry. I was just like, I can't stand human beings. You know, I was full into my namaste, veganism, grain-free, gluten-free, everything. I was eating raw vegan food. So it really affected my frequency levels. When you enter into a full vegan diet and lifestyle, it will raise your frequency. It will. It can. But here's the thing. If you already have a high resting frequency, that's going to totally skew your perception. I was vegan for about 6.5 years. I was devoutly vegan. For some of that period, I was a raw vegan. So I definitely had these shadow behaviors rise up. Because really, what is a shadow aspect of you? The most powerful part. But I did not possess the emotional and mental maturity to be able to tap into that. So we created this division within myself that then became projected as a division between myself and the rest of humanity. Obviously, my husband and children are exempt from me and my shadow behaviors, but all of y'all were not exempt. So number one, a tendency to harshly judge others, especially if that judgment comes on impulse. Number two, pointing out one's own insecurities as flaws in another. I would do that too. I wouldn't do it to your face. I would just quietly condemn you. Silent condemnation. I think that's even worse than outright saying it, because in order to outright say it, you have to have at least some level of courage. I didn't have the courage to outright say it. I would just like, you know, totally judging you in silence. A quick temper with people in subordinate positions of power. That I also experienced quite a bit of that, you know, that was ugly. Very, very, very ugly. And I think part of the reason why I wanted to limit my interaction with others to that degree is because I knew deep down into my core, this is ugly. This is so ugly. This is not who I am. But I was refusing to take a good hard look at my shadow. And when you do that, you enter into this space of cognitive dissonance. And as you become dissonant to the truth of you, you begin to project that out to everybody. So frequently playing the victim of every situation. I felt I was a victim. Absolutely. I felt I was a victim, but I'd never say anything. So my perception of victimization would continue. It was a perpetual thing. Perpetual thing. Number five, a willingness to step on others to achieve one's own ends. That one I was never okay with, surprisingly. Surprisingly, I was never okay with that. My empathy would kick in and I would just cry. I would like be like, I hate people. I hate this, you know, because I just can't do that to people. I don't know. I don't like that at all, no matter what cycle I'm in. Number six, unacknowledged biases and prejudices. I didn't want to take a good hard look at who I was becoming, who I had become, and what process I was already in. Number seven, a messiah complex. Now, how many quote unquote spiritual people have this messiah complex? Look at this list. It's only seven. How many spiritual people have all seven? And these are who you're listening to? Don't do that. Don't do that. Neutrally observe. Observe their behaviors. Observe the ways in which their shadow behaviors are being expressed. Okay? It doesn't necessarily mean they're a bad person. It doesn't. Yes, Annie, this is where I was headed. Hi, Annie. She says, I see the shadow as our rejected, disowned, fragmented parts. And the shadow can also be positive traits. Yes, absolutely. So that's one of the things that I realized. All of these aspects of me are seeking my attention, my acknowledgement. I needed to sit with myself in stillness. And this is why I ended up finding myself pretty much alone, pretty much isolated, outside of the time spent with my family, you know, my husband and my children. I did not interact with anyone else. Any type of interaction was kept strictly superficial. If you knew me at that time, which most people who knew me at that time are no longer a part of my life. I was nothing but smartassness, sarcasm, you know, nothing but joking around, keeping things very, very light, never actually sharing my personal beliefs, never giving my opinions, just really like, I want to accommodate everyone. So you don't start to wonder why I'm so different. The entire focus of the start of my shadow exploration was about assimilation so that I could be hidden in plain sight. It was a very, very scary thing to even think that someone could see me being different. That was very, very scary. And as I began to do this shadow work, which was not intentional at first, it was not intentional. I didn't know anything about shadow selves. This was a time when spirituality was not cool. Okay. You had to actually dig, like really, really, really dig to get any type of spiritual information. Esoterica was not popular. This was just something that, no, it was not on and popping like it is now. So what ended up happening was I ended up discovering these different aspects of me that it was hard. It was hard. It was really, really hard. We're going to go over this part of the list. I got this from Loner Wolf, lonerwolf.com. And these are the 13 different shadows. These are shadow monsters. And I could totally resonate with the way the person who wrote this article called it a monster, because I felt like such an effing monster. So the egotistical monster, the root cause is primal fear of not being good enough, not existing, being nobody. This person displays the following characteristics: arrogance, egocentricity, pompousness, inconsiderateness, self-indulgence, narcissism, excessive pride. Now, the egotistical monster that resided within my shadows was absolutely afraid of people seeing that I was not good enough, not evolved enough, not worthy of consideration. It was difficult. It was difficult. So I didn't think I was arrogant at the time. Looking back now, oh my gosh, the level of arrogance was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. So I would still prepare animal-based dishes, okay, with meat. I wouldn't eat it. I wouldn't let any of my food touch it, but that's what my family eats. And I mean, I don't know how I didn't see this as arrogance, but I didn't. I would be like, okay, guys, I'm done searing your animal flesh. That's what I would say. Instead of like, hi, guys, food's ready. Time to eat. Let's come to the table. No, I would be like, the seared animal flesh is ready for consumption. You know, like, that's just so ew. And the pompousness. And just because I kept quiet with most people doesn't mean it wasn't there. It was absolutely there. It was absolutely there. Let's not lie to ourselves. I'm not willing to lie to myself anymore. That was there. I just hid it really well. Really, really well. Number two, the neurotic monster. Woo. Root cause, fear of life, others, and self, desire to regain control. This is the root causation of my issues with control. For a very long time, I had control issues, severe control issues, where everything had to be in its perfect place. The labels all had to face the same way, like just craziness for me. So this person displays the following characteristics: paranoia, obsessiveness, suspiciousness, finicky, demanding, masochistic. Mm-hmm. Hurt me good, baby. Compulsive behavior. I'm just saying. You know, the neurotic monster is not necessarily sadistic. It's more like masochism, where the more you can punish yourself, because you can control that. You can absolutely control that. Why can I work out to the degree that I can work out? Because there's still a sliver of that neurotic monster that lives in the shadows. It's a form of punishment for myself. It hurts so damn good. It hurts so good to feel the burn, to feel the deconstruction of that muscle tissue. But now it's not necessarily to just punish myself. Now I see it as this is a potentiality for conscious rebuilding. But that doesn't mean the neurotic monster does not still exist. It absolutely still exists, but it's very confined. It's very diminished. And it's okay for us to recognize that no matter how many cycles of shadow work we go through, that some of these different shadow monsters will still exist within us. We don't have to be ashamed that it will take us multiple cycles to more thoroughly address some of these prominent monsters in our lives. There's nothing shameful about that. You are a human being having a human experience. You deserve the level of consideration that you would give to someone else in the very same exact process you're in. So let's have some of that self-love. Let's have some of that shadow balancing. Number three, the untrustworthy monster, the root is fear of life in general. And people who struggle with this are secretive, impulsive, frivolous, irresponsible, deceitful, unreliable. See, I was extremely reliable because I was overcompensating. I was overcompensating for my fear of being labeled as unreliable. Ooh, very secretive. Very secretive. No one needs to know any of my business. You know, it's just one of those things. Like, I'm not doing anything shady. I just don't want anyone to know any of my business. Why? Because I'm afraid Afraid of what? Well, that you're going to interfere with what I'm trying to do for myself. Well, if you're afraid, that means you're plotting on people. No, I can guarantee you I wasn't plotting on anyone. I was just so full of fear. I was very fear-based for quite a long time. Much of my life. Okay? The emotionally unstable monster comes from a basic feeling of being unlovable and powerless. A reaction to unresolved emotional pain. Yeah, that one is still very prominent. That one is still very, very prominent. Moody, melodramatic, manipulative, weepy, over-emotional, impulsive, changeable. The changeable, that one hurts my feelings. And you guys are probably like, why would changeable hurt your feelings? Of all the words that are on this screen, why would changeable hurt my feelings? Because I would change myself to suit any environment that I'm in. So that I don't inconvenience people. So that I don't offend you with my presence. It's a full rejection of self. And on that, you guys have helped me tremendously. I've made tremendous progress with the emotionally unstable monster that hides in my shadows. It's not so much a monster anymore. It's more like a naughty puppy, like a naughty little puppy. That's okay. You know, when you start with a young puppy, you can modify its behaviors so that it can better assimilate into your life, so that you can have a better flow with life, right? So it's not about killing these monsters. I failed to make that very clear in the beginning. This is not about killing monsters. No. I mean, these spiritual people who claim they're evolved, who want to be viewed as evolved, and they're making it a goal to be demon killers, demon slayers, ego killers, you know, murder the ego. I'm not violent to my core. Like, I don't need to murder or kill anything. I need to understand it so that when I understand its needs, I can fulfill its needs and it can stop being naughty. It's like, you know, when you look at a toddler who's acting up in a door, because I have a lot of kids, right? And up until recently, until I began being publicly visible, I've been strictly a stay-at-home mom. That's been my focus for over 20 years at this point. And it was this thing of, I understood. My children rarely had tantrums, very, very rare to have a tantrum, especially in a store, because I was very perceptive of their needs. You're tired? Let me hurry up. Just get the basics. We're not going down every single aisle. We're going to get going. We're going to get you some rest. You know, hang in there. Give me a few minutes. We're going to get you some rest. Get you out of the shopping cart. You're hungry. Let me find a snack that's acceptable. And maybe you can eat that while we are grocery shopping or whatever. They never had tantrums. Never. Just one time my oldest had a tantrum. He just wanted to know why kids did that in a store. As soon as he had a tantrum, I was like, "You okay?" And he just kept screaming, took him right out of the shopping cart, brought him to the car. I was like, "We're going home." And he was like, "I just wanted to know what that was like." And I was like, "Are you kidding me right now?" Because I see kids doing that. I didn't know why. I'm like, because their parents don't listen to them. Their parents are not paying attention to what they need right then and there. So that's what they do. That's how they learn to communicate. And he's like, "Oh." We went back in the store. I was like, "Are you done?" He's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Are you sure? Because, I mean, if you're tired, we can go home." He's like, "No." He's not tired. He just wanted to know why kids had tantrums. So he tried it. When you understand the needs and you provide for those needs, there's no monster that exists. I didn't slay anything in my shadows. I nurtured those parts. I embraced those parts. I understood those parts exist for specific things, certain types of circumstance that maybe I've lived through or haven't lived through. Those are the parts that will protect me during those times. Those are the parts. There's nothing you need to slay, okay? Nothing needs to be killed. Nothing needs to be caged. Everything needs to be acknowledged, considered, nurtured, provided for. Number five, the controlling monster. Basic mistrust of life, feelings of abandonment, not being good enough. I don't know about you guys, but I this is getting very intense for me. I don't know if you guys can feel yourself resonating so deeply with all of these different shadow monsters and feeling like, gosh, I have issues. Gosh, what's wrong with me? Why are there so many monsters inside of me? And talking about it out loud is a much different experience than being silently cognitive. Talking about it out loud with you guys holds me to a higher level of accountability. I ain't gonna lie, it's becoming a bit of a struggle to continue with the subject. But what better time than now, when I'm struggling with a subject, to be able to show myself that I have the courage, not just for you guys and your benefit, but specifically for me and my own, my understanding of me, my understanding of the progress that I've made. Because way back when, before I had gotten to where I am right now with my understanding, I would shut down. So when you're faced with the same triggers and you react differently, that's tangible evidence of your growth, your evolution, your development. So let's keep going. That controlling monster, the root cause is basic mistrust of life, feelings of abandonment, and not being good enough. I mean, how many of us consistently feel as though we are not good enough? And why do you feel like you're not good enough? This person displays the following characteristics: suspicious, jealous, possessive, bossy, obsessive. That word bossy. Oh my gosh. Number six, the cynical monster. Root cause, protection against feeling too vulnerable. This person displays the characteristics of negative, overcritical, patronizing, resentful, cantankerous. That word. I've been called cantankerous by teachers when I was younger. Elementary school. That's why I know the word. I was called cantankerous in second grade. You best believe I figured out how to spell that, and I looked it up in a dictionary. Second grade, you best believe. That's when I learned the word. Second grade. And it stuck with me. I'm pushing mid-40s. And a single word stuck with me from second grade. These are the things that we reject because people in our environment, from childhood until now, they tell us we're not allowed to be this. We're not allowed to be who we are. I don't care what you allow. I don't care if you view me as cantankerous. The only thing I care about is my whole being wellness and how that whole being wellness can be of benefit to anyone who witnesses, who chooses to witness me in my authentic process of progression. Number seven. The wrathful monster. Ooh. fear of others, mistrust of life, closed heart. This is a person who is ruthless, vengeful, bitchy, quick-tempered, quarrelsome. The wrathful monster in me needs to be paddled some days. Some days I feel like I have to paddle that monster. Like, calm down. You know? And here's the thing. Before I forget, I often use the different monsters that live within me to regulate the other monsters. They're just a little tribe at this point. They are a tribe of friends working together very, very closely to keep each other healthy, balanced. It's a beautiful thing. I've really come into my personal power and personal balance, my centeredness, by not shaming any monsters inside me. Instead, I encourage them to regulate each other. Yes. So, the rigid monster, fear and rejection of the unknown, chaos and ego death. Those are the causes of the rigid monster. So this type of person is uptight, intolerant, racist, sexist, ableist, homophobic, obstinate, uncompromising, inflexible, narrow-minded. Also me, the inflexible, uncompromising, yes. Sometimes intolerant, yes. You don't have to have all of the different characteristics for you to be able to find the courage to acknowledge that monster exists within you. I'm not racist. I'm not sexist. I'm not ableist. I'm not homophobic. I'm none of those things. But I do still have a rigid monster. I do still have a rigid monster within me. Not so rigid anymore. I have that rigid monster do mental yoga daily. I no longer scream at it. It likes that type of confrontation. It gives it something to push against. So instead, that rigid monster, you guys have heard me speak to it. Girl. Girl. Stop it. Stop it. Don't be like that. And I'm just like, okay. Okay. So you can deal with these monsters in any way you decide. Whatever is healthiest for you. Anna says, can't we just release them? So your suggestion is to temper them. To release them in that sense, Anna, it's a very good question. To release them in that sense is to reject them. Are you intellectualizing your rejection of yourself? I'm releasing these monsters. Where are you releasing them? Out of your field, then you're rejecting it. You're not allowing it to be a part of you. You are pushing it out. You are abandoning the monsters. You are in all of these like trigger words that are super negative and super this and super that. That's what we're doing. We have to allow ourselves to begin understanding why these monsters act the way they do. And honestly, the word monster, as I'm talking about this with you guys, is feeling less and less appropriate. It's feeling like I need to replace the word monster with the word toddler, the rigid toddler, the wrathful toddler. These are the aspects of our inner child. We have more than one inner child. You guys know that, right? The primary inner child that I have is a wrathful toddler. And you guys have heard me say this before. My inner child carries daggers in her pockets. Ruthless. Savage. She's the one that protects me as an adult. When I lose the courage to stand up for myself, to say something for myself, she comes out with daggers in her hands, pocket full of sunshine, ready to F stuff up. And I gotta let her know, like, no, we don't have to fight everyone. And she's very quick, very, very quick to be like, no, I will. I can do this for you. And it's like, I don't need any more war. I don't need any more war. why make it a point to allow the wrathful toddler to come forward to prove a point? To put someone in their place? Well, if you make me feel like I have to reject parts of myself, your proper place that you should be put in is outside of my life. So the proper, healthier solution for that is to just walk away from you. And it's at that point, you're in your proper place, nowhere in my life. And these are some mental gymnastics you're going to have to do in order to begin understanding how to better calibrate the way you receive, embrace, coexist with these different shadow toddlers. We don't punish a child for not knowing any better. Nor do we stay in that state of being a child who doesn't know. And that is the basis of the shadow work. So the rigid monster, root cause is fear and rejection of the unknown, chaos, ego death. This person displays characteristics of being uptight, intolerant. Oh, I already told you guys that. Let's go to number 9. The glib monster, distrust of life, others, and self. This is a type of person who's superficial, cunning, inconsistent, sly, crafty. I know that I can be that way with people who are that way. You have to be that way before I choose to be that way with you too. And that's more of a reflection, deflecting it back to you. That's a trauma response. Notice how these are all trauma responses. We've lived lives of trauma, but we are not victims. So instead of recognizing it as a trauma response, we see it as a flaw. Instead of realizing we're not victims, we're simply learning in a very intense, hands-on manner, we identify ourselves as victims. Do you see how upside down we've been taught to exist? Oh, this is powerful. This is a very powerful declaration of your current truth, Anna. She says, I just want to put them on a boat and let them go and not be bothered. I'm learning. Powerful. That is so powerful. That depth of truth, of recognizing and speaking out loud exactly where you are in your journey, that is not a place of weakness. You are so powerfully positioned to begin truly learning. For me, weakness would be the equivalent of you choosing to believe that there is nothing wrong with you, pretending like you know everything about yourself, about life, about your effects on your environment, about all of that. People who act as though they don't have anything to learn from anyone beneath them. But you know we're shoulder to shoulder, right? You know that, right? We're shoulder to shoulder. There's no one above you and no one beneath you. We're all at just at different spaces of awareness, of being aware of where you are in your place of learning. Number 10, the nonchalant monster. Buried grief, fear, and shame. Numbness is a defense. It's a defense mechanism. It's a way to protect yourself from feeling the things that will cause you to be forced to address specific aspects of your life and interactions. This person displays characteristics of emotional detachment. They're distant, indifferent, uncaring, unexcited. So many of us. So many of us try and play nonchalant when deep down inside we feel like we're dying. Day in and day out, we attend the funeral of our lives. No one has any clue And as we do this, and we're nonchalant about the process that we're in, we get further triggered, because if we are dying, if we are attending a funeral for ourselves and our ego every single day, and no one stops by to bring you funeral flowers, you begin to misconstrue that as evidence of nobody cares. When in reality, we go out of our way to hide this from the very people who care so much. Do you find that no one cares in your life? No one cares about you? And if you do, is it really that they don't care? Or have you closed yourself off to the degree that you have, to the point where they don't know what's going on and that they should be concerned, because you're afraid that if they knew, that they wouldn't care? So you take away their opportunity to know and show you that they care, because that's what I did. I still do that quite a bit. Where I don't want to share what's going on because I don't know how people will receive it. And if I don't know how you'll receive it, what if you reject me because of it? What if you agree with the people who don't like me and have said like really nasty things to me? And then I don't know that I have the courage or the capacity to survive you doing that too. It's a very deeply buried fear. Very, very deeply buried fear. Sky is asking, and we're going to answer this question slightly later, okay? Once we acknowledge these parts of ourselves, what do we do with it? We will definitely answer that. That's part of what we'll go over. Number 11, the perverted monster. Repressed sexual energy, possible unresolved childhood wounds. This is a person who is sadistic, lustful, depraved, and corrupt. Number 12, the cowardly monster. It's rooted in fear, disbelief, and self. This person displays characteristics of weak will, timid fear, or timidity and fearfulness. The naive monster. The root cause is refusal to grow up, lack of individuated ego, where you try and be like your environment. This person is puerile, petty, immature, illogical, simple-minded. Oh, wow. That kind of hurt my feelings. I mean, I don't know that I have a naive monster, but that kind of hurt my feelings. Ooh, those words were potent. Wow. My goodness. So how many of you have identified so many monsters within you? And as I've shared about me and my own journey in my life and these different monsters and how I'm beginning to view the monsters as toddlers instead, just kind of sit and think of how that's affected you. How has that changed your perception of yourself, of your journey, of the person you are, the person you're becoming, you know? And there's other concepts that we're probably going to run out of time, but I kind of just want to mention these terms so that you can look it up yourself later. Shadow feminine, shadow relationships. These are things that are, it hurts. Wow. You know, really allowing yourself to become very aware of these different aspects of you. So let's touch on how we embrace the shadow self. Once you're aware that these shadows exist, we have to begin the process of embracing them. Okay, we have to really begin the process of embracing them. If we choose to, instead of embrace, fight them, that's not going to turn out very well. It's just not. Okay, So according to an article in mindbodygreen.com, some of the ways we can embrace our shadow self is to become a curious observer. To really allow yourself to begin the process of observing where all of these things come from. Where are they rooted? What parts of you, your life, all of these different things created the monster, created the need for you to fragment into different components and then reject those components? Is it something from childhood? Was it something someone said? Was it the way someone made you feel? We have to begin seeking these answers out. Number two, practice non-judgment towards yourself. No putting yourself down. No condemnation. No, oh my gosh, I'm so dumb. No, oh, I better stop being a tyrant. Stop repeating and reliving the recordings that were recorded by fractured people. Recorded by fractured people who allowed their shadow monsters to speak in that moment. Have you ever sat back and just kind of allowed yourself to see? A lot of your recordings from childhood are the words of the shadow monsters of the people in your environment at that time. And then you wonder why you have monsters that exist. Well, you adopted those monsters from possibly the adult in your environment, caregivers, teachers. You allowed their monsters to be adopted by you. And as those monsters set up shop in your space, well, they began to reproduce. And then your own monsters were born. When you look at it in that way, do you still feel wounded? Do you still feel like you're broken? Or do you begin to understand like, oh my gosh, that's all it was? That's all it was. It's like you adopted someone else's dog. You know, someone's dog got lost or whatever. Your neighbor's dog ran into your yard. And instead of identifying the owner, you decided to just keep feeding the dog and then it was your dog, right? The owner never came to look for it. And then another neighbor's. And next thing you know, you have an entire kennel worth of dogs. And these dogs were not neutered or spayed, whichever one is for dogs. I can never remember. They were able to procreate. And instead of finding good homes, healthy homes for these puppies, you kept all of them too. It's just a part of your growth. The more aware you become, the more empowered you are to begin finding healthy homes for these puppies that are half grown. They're not vicious. I mean, who's scared of a puppy? A puppy. It's just a puppy. That's it. When you begin to acknowledge where it comes from, you begin to really remove those negative emotions, that shame, that guilt. You begin to understand what process you're in and that it is literally just the process. Working with a professional can also help you. For many of us, we either don't have the budget or we feel ashamed or, you know, the stigma of mental health, you know, like heaven forbid you acknowledge you have mental health struggles and get the assistance that you need. Because you're, I don't know, embarrassing the family. You're just, you know, being dramatic or, you know, all of these different stigmas that people place upon you. When you work with a professional, usually, the professional is not emotionally invested in you. because they're not emotionally invested, it creates a much safer space for you to be much more honest, for you to be much more vulnerable. I don't know if you guys realize this. For quite a few of us, it is a lot easier to be vulnerable and share of your deepest, darkest secrets with a complete stranger than it is to say these things to the people who live with you, people who know how to access you, people who you're related to. If you need help sifting through your life, find a professional. If you don't have anyone that you can do this with, find a professional mental health provider, okay? And again, you want to make sure that the provider you go to is one who you are well paired with, where they're not judgmental of you. They don't further shame you. They're very supportive. That's very important. Number four, meditate. I know. People like to use meditation as a catch-all to fix everything. And the reality is, when you find the courage to still your mind, which is what meditation is designed to do, that's the intention of meditation. It's a very powerful thing. It can absolutely resolve quite a bit of the things that you are finding as an issue. But the thing is, if you can't quiet your mind and you continue to force yourself to meditate in the traditional sense, you're going to further empower those monsters. They're going to go from toddlers to monsters. I'm not capable of meditating in that way. I have raging ADHD. I do. And so I can't sit still. I can't do that. But I have other ways of meditating. Did you know that if you run on a treadmill or an elliptical in a sprint, like run as fast as you can with your eyes closed, obviously holding onto the bar so you don't fall, and you play music really, really loud and you sing along with the music while you're running at your top speed, for some, that is enough overstimulation that your brain can become quiet for once. You have to preoccupy the body and the mind. I have sensory integration issues. That ties into my ADHD. Everything gets my attention, like it's this whole smorgasbord of overstimulation consistently. And when I do that, see the amount of brain power it takes to coordinate, to run full speed with my eyes closed at that. And then my brain's computing is preoccupied by singing a song. It's typically a different song than what song is playing in my earbuds, extremely loud. And so my poor monkey brain is so preoccupied, it has zero space, zero capacity left to interfere with my meditation. That's how I meditate. That's how I do it. I have to preoccupy the monkey mind to that degree. Now, that might work for some. It might work or not work for others. If you are a neurodivergent and you're capable of multidimensional processing, you're probably going to have to do something to that degree. I'm extremely neurodivergent, and so it's extremely difficult for me to sit and meditate. Only a portion of me will be quieted down, and the rest will continue to fire on all cylinders. V12, baby. It's a V12 we're running, you know? So I got to preoccupy all those other cylinders. Number five, shadow journaling. And I'm going to give you guys some prompts that I'll share the link right here. If it's from the mindbodygreen.com website. A put the website on the screen so that way you guys can see it and maybe go to it if you want. If you want to, oops, what happened? Oh, there. There you go. Mindbodygreen.com. It's about the shadow self. Okay. So we were at shadow journaling. Caraballo recommends shadow journaling as you're getting started on your shadow work journey. The benefit of journaling is it allows you to get all the thoughts out of your head and onto paper, offering a deep opportunity for reflection. It's a beautiful thing. My shadow journaling is poetry. So people have asked me in the past couple years, like, Emmy, how come you don't share more of your poetry? And I tell them, like, my poetry is so ridiculously tragic. It is tragic. If you read my poetry, you would think that I'm going through some type of devastating thing. I'm really not. I'm really not. I'm not going through anything devastating. It's just the shadow valley is deep, baby. It's deep. It's beneath. It is beneath sea level. Mike says to look. My shadow journal is not paper. It's in my hand. Let's see. Ooh. Loving you taught me how to love myself. The gravity of that. In one aspect, my loving you showed me how I can love myself. You know, it's a beautiful experience. In a different aspect, me loving you and giving to you and giving to you and you not appreciating me, not cherishing me, you continuing to reject me, condemn me, despite how much love I am consciously willing to give to you on a consistent basis without you asking me to, finally showed me that I should love myself in that way. The totality of one sentence. Which one do you identify with? What type of environment are you in? The kind that causes you to feel the need to love someone to that degree, and because you love them to that degree, they encourage you to blossom as you encourage them to blossom. And it's like a sunflower patch, you know, where these sunflowers, when the sun doesn't shine, say it's a cloudy day, they face each other as a source of light. That's beautiful. Or do you identify with the other potentiality of that statement, where I just loved you and loved you and loved you and I gave and I bled for you to the point where I have nothing left and it still wasn't enough. And so now I understand my blood is for me so that I can live, so that I can do more than exist, so that I can actually truly live. And that my blood in my veins is my liquid magic. That is the gift the ancestors gave to me, for me. I mean, which one do you identify with? Right, Alexandra, she says both. For me, that the answer to that question, it depends what environment you're asking about. Because I've lived in both environments where people have been so beautiful and encouraging. Like you guys have been such a crucial part of me understanding how to love myself. Like, ooh, oh my gosh. You guys are amazing. And then there's this other journey that I had before this part that showed me that I was not living. I was in the process of perpetual death for people who couldn't even be bothered to see how they took from me. As long as I'm giving, right? As long as I'm giving. And the moment I stop giving is the moment they had a problem with me. That's okay. Being centered between both experiences creates a totality of that perception. The juxtaposition of the opposing polarities. It's like having two eyes instead of one. Being able to see such a wider range of perception. I'm not bitter about any of it. The entire experience was profound. The entire experience grew me, both ends of the spectrum. It grew me. So, number six, past life regression therapy. This could help because sometimes part of the shadow stuff is to do with karmic bleed over. Could help. Could definitely help if you're paired with a skilled hypnotherapist, QHHT facilitator. It could greatly help. I need to bring my girlfriend on here sometime, Charmaine. She's so ridiculously amazing. I see her as a reflection of me. That's why I've mentioned her several times already. I need to bring her on here because it's like she speaks from a different position within my heart, and it gets more thoughts, more contemplations to come forward for me personally. It's so empowering. I love it. So, exercise prompts to get started. Label your emotional experiences. Now, you guys are probably like, wait, what? Labels? Why would we need to label anything? Because label your emotional experiences. Get into the habit of labeling your emotional experiences in detail. For example, if you're feeling sad, she says, go a little deeper and ask yourself, what kind of sadness am I feeling? Perhaps lonely, depleted, exhausted, hopeless. The more descriptive and specific in labeling emotions, the more awareness is created. So, ooh, Annie, I did not know you were a regression therapist. I might need to book a session with you. I resonate with you so much. I might need to book a session with you. Regression therapist, Miss Annie Salau over here. Hey, love it, love it. Annie, can you comment a page or a website, however they can contact you if they're interested in seeking some regression therapy? I'll put it on the screen. So anyone interested on Facebook or on YouTube, you can have Annie's proper work contact info and you guys can kind of, you know, get in touch with each other. Annie is amazing. She's amazing, I swear. I didn't know you were a regression therapist, though. Here, number two. All right. Think about someone who triggers you. Thinking of a recent experience in which you came across someone who really annoyed or frustrated you can help quickly access your shadow. Take a moment to consider what it was specifically that felt so bothersome about this person or what they were doing or saying. So you guys heard me talk recently about the end of a long-term friendship for me. It was a little bit devastating in the first couple days. Maybe more like the first 24 hours. It was devastating because it was like, oh my gosh, what just happened here? You know? And then it became this thing where I actually realized I was not devastated to lose the person. No. The way in which the person chose to walk away was their final gift to me. I'm not devastated about the person. I was devastated because of what got triggered and rose to the surface with that interaction. This fear, this shame of being smart, of being highly capable, of being seen for the gravity that I am. Oh my gosh, that was triggered. Could you imagine to always feel like people will not like you if they understand the capacity with which you could operate, right? Like to the point where you've modified your organic vocabulary, your vernacular, you've modified it. The method with which you communicate is now different, just so people can feel more comfortable around you. I had to, as a teen, make sure I didn't use words that were too I don't even know what to call it. Because now I'm feeling myself triggered, like, be careful of how you word this, because I mean, you don't want people to think you think you're better than everyone. Words that were too big. Words that are more archaic. Words that were used in times where people were different. I had to modify that. I had to modify so much about myself. It's literally just within the past maybe 2 years, 3 years. I don't know. Whenever I switched over to YouTube, no, it's when my mom died. Wow. A realization that a lot of the shame that I felt about my intelligence comes from her. Wow. That's definitely going to have to be unpackaged later. Wow. It's a beautiful thing to be able to acknowledge and commit to a process of releasing that acknowledgement. It'll be worked through, but it's going to take some time. So we only have 5 minutes left. We'll be able to do this, me and all my monsters. Ask yourself if you often criticize yourself for the same behavior, or if this person reminds you of someone who has wronged you. And the friend, you know, almost was like a surrogate mother for me for quite a few years. And so now I see that's what the triggering was, because like I assess within my heart, does it hurt that they're gone? God, this is going to sound a little bit callous. Not really. Not really. Am I surprised that they behaved and treated me in the way that they did? Not really. You know, this is the first time in the entire time that I've known them that they've treated me this way. But this was also the first time in the entire time I've known them that I've said something. So, you know, and maybe that's why I never said anything from the start, because I could already recognize that this was within them. This capacity was within them. So do I feel a loss? Again, not really. Was I triggered? Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, yes. Did I know then, in the past 2 weeks, why I was triggered? Well, I mean, I figured it was like an old wound rising up, that this was something that was needing to be healed. And it's only in this moment. it's another one of those things that I have to work through that ties into my complex relationship with my mother. It was a complex relationship, sometimes toxic, sometimes ridiculously powerful, empowering, healing, full of love. Just really depended on which of her monsters was present that day, you know? So, you know, doesn't mean that it doesn't mean that she was a bad person. She's one of the most generous, most loving, most patient, helpful people. Anyone who knew her would say that. But I also knew different sides of her that she didn't show other people. It's not that she's fake. It's that she's compartmentalized. That's a survival tactic. So when you compartmentalize yourself, does that make you a fake person? Or does that show you that you have spent so much of your life trying to survive that your entire auric field has now become a graveyard of aspects of you? Because what are these boxes? When you compartmentalize, you put things in boxes. When your body dies, what is the traditional way you deal with a body? You put it in a box and you bury it. You bury it. Now is the time for resurrection. This insurrection towards the programs that have kept you very confined, very small, very much still in your place of pain. Have an insurrection towards that. And as you complete that process of insurrection towards the programs, then begin focusing your attention and your energy towards the resurrection. And maybe that's what Jesus was trying to tell us. Maybe that's what he was trying to tell us. Actually try and teach us through his life. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And the final thing, we're about out of time. Here it goes. Dig deep with specific questions. Asking yourself thoughtful questions about your own shadow self from time to time. This is auto-psychotherapy. Excuse me. Powerful, powerful tool. When you can become proficient with auto-psychotherapy, you can begin asking yourself questions and digging your own boxes out of their resting places. As you're learning to witness your shadow, the questions that you should ask. Oh no, I'm out of time. I'm out of time. There were journal prompts. I didn't get to write them all down. Hold on. Let me give you guys the ones that I do have. What are some of the messages you have received about experiencing a specific shadow emotion? Let's put this on the screen. As I'm doing this, for those of you who are in my membership, not membership, those of you who are members of my private ministry group, we're going to be talking at 8:45. It's in about 15 minutes. Just join me on thesoulsanctuary.love. If you would like to continue this talk with us, you can absolutely join. You'll get instant access. No matter what level of recurring contribution tier you select, you will have access to this private exclusive chat space that we have. It's the link at the bottom of the screen, thesoulsanctuary.love. That's where you go. Okay. So quick question. What are some of the messages you've received about experiencing a specific shadow emotion? I'm just going to put these on the screen really quick. And what you can do is when you go to rewatch this, assuming you're going to rewatch, you can go ahead and pause. You can write these down for yourself. So number two, when you were younger, were you allowed to feel shadow emotions, or were you shamed or judged or punished for having these experiences? That one triggered me. That one triggered me. Yikes. Oh, one of the things, really just shamed for being a sensitive person. Ah, dagger in the chest and the back. daggers. Yeah, I mean, I'm just a very sensitive person. And I think if I hadn't been shamed about being sensitive, it wouldn't have been such a big deal and I could have processed it as a child rather than stuffing it all down like a freaking adult sausage. Just saying. Did you learn to ignore or avoid shadow emotions because of lack of support early on? Oh my goodness. I know I did. And final journal prompt. Have you ever been met with anger or overwhelmed when you shared your feelings in a significant relationship? Are you made to feel like you are just too much? It's too much. It's too heavy. Let me temper my attitude. You guys, shadow work, the full gambit of it, would definitely need more than just one episode. I hope, though, that today's episode, we were able to pack in as much information to empower you to begin your shadow journey. It's nothing you have to be scared of. It's normal and natural to be scared, but it's not required. That fear is simply bringing your attention to what you need to pay attention to right now. So pay attention. Get to know yourself. Get acquainted with all of your toddlers. There's no reason they have to be monsters. Feed the toddlers. Give them some snacks. Give them some juice. Read them a story of your life. Let them take a nap. Really just begin loving on them. Loving on your parts so they understand they don't need to continue to simply be a traumatic response. We can do this. We've been doing this. It's just now you have the words, the concepts, the tool bag. You've been doing this already, though. So many of you have resonated, and it's because you have already started this journey. It's just a matter of continuing it now. Be empowered. Walk with your head high, your chin up. And if people don't like that your chin is up, that means they've identified themselves as beneath you. That's for them to deal with, not you. Carry yourself always with grace, compassion, and a sense of pride in who you are, as well as who you are becoming. There's so much potentiality. I hope you tap into every single one. From the deepest depths of my heart's oceans, I love you guys so much. If you'd like to join my members area, this is a private ministry area, simply go to thesoulsanctuary.love and I'll see everyone in about 10 minutes. Bye, guys.